Joining me now here in the Allstate Showcase studio in historic Tribune Tower on North Michigan Avenue is Democratic State Representative Rob Martwick from Chicago. Representative, thanks so much for joining me this morning.
Thanks, Rick. It's always fun to be here.
We were talking earlier with Brian Mackey from NPR Illinois about the fact that what I think for the most part would be mundane and normal is actually highly unusual for the fact that you guys were able to come together with Republicans and have a budget deal.
Yeah, it's wonderful. And you know, truth be told, that's the story is that it's unbelievable that we could come together with Republicans. The backside of the story is we always have. Right. I mean, the negotiations that would have produced balanced budgets were going on between Democrats and Republicans in a bipartisan fashion for the last 4 years. There was one guy standing in the way, and that was Governor Rauner. So, you know, the surreal part is that suddenly at the end of session, we started to hear that he was actually willing to sign a budget, and we just, both sides were just shocked, couldn't believe it, you know.
Well, is part of the reason the fact of what happened last year and the fact that a number of Republicans joined with Democrats, crossed over the aisle to support an override of his budget veto, of his tax increase veto, and that those forces could happen again?
Yeah, well, and I mean, I think that's part of it. I'm not really sure, to be honest with you. I really figured his best political play would be to double down on that the tax increase was wrong, not to accept it, because in my mind, when he says that this tax increase was necessary, that this balanced budget is the way to go about things, and that the turnaround agenda items were not necessary, he's basically taking blame for the last 3.5 years. All those people we killed, the $12 billion of additional debt that's put on the backs of taxpayers, that's kind of like he's saying, oops, my bad.
Well, I thought, for example, and I mentioned this to Brian, is, you know, we had heard for months, actually since the end of last legislative session, about the evils of the tax increase and how he's going to work to roll it back and roll it back. And in fact, it was part, a very small bit of a rollback, but it was part of the budget that he presented to the legislature in February.
It was.
And so now that seems to undercut that issue in some respects, doesn't it?
It does. And you know, I want to point out, since you bring that up, I want to point out the courage of the 15 Republicans who decided to use math and finance and good government principles and say, we've got to balance this budget, we've got to stop the bleeding. All of them are gone. They're all kicked out. They were all told, no money for you, you're out. And it's a shame, because we're losing the people who were the real adults in the room. And you know, now you've got the almost entire Republican caucus, except for the extreme right wing, the vast majority of them have agreed to this budget that they agreed to last year, basically the same budget. And we're losing those rational, math-based voices, which is really scary for what the next legislative session will bring.
Well, and speaking of math-based, and I note that you decided to provide your colleagues with the Casio calculators. I was actually wondering where mine was. I figured you'd have one for me.
I gave the extras to a school.
So. Good, good. But about the issue of the graduated tax, and
sure.
Again, I mentioned this to Brian, that because of the inability of to be able to articulate the tax rates,
right,
that provides a potential opening for criticism of it. And everybody points to, well, if there's somebody who had a plan, well, Representative Martwick had a plan, and look what this plan does. And so, and I know you've explained it before, but I'd like you to explain it again. So when people hear this criticism that a graduated tax is going to raise your tax,
right,
what yours was more of an experimental adoption and an example.
It was introduced during the budget impasse, and it was designed to show how we could address not just our current problems, like the current budget does, and it does a pretty good job of that, but we've got these mounting problems that are going to continue to grow. So I did some research. I asked our Commission on Government Forecasting and Accountability. This is a government agency that's nonpartisan. They are number crunchers and economists. And I asked them, over the course of the next 27 years, if we can balance our budgets on the 4.95% tax, and if we live up to our commitments on pensions and education, We are basically running our government at a 6.45% flat tax. If we don't adopt a 6.45% flat tax as of January 1st, and we're clearly not going to do that, then each successive year that we go without it means we need to raise the flat tax even higher to balance the budgets. And they're talking about 7.5%, 8.5% flat tax down the road. The point is that we've got this massive pension debt that we have to get a hold of. And so what I did was I said, mathematically, how do we solve that problem? And I showed that with graduated income tax rates, we could knock off 7 years off of the repayment schedule and save $60 billion on the repayment of the pension debt. We could provide an instant $2.5 billion historic property tax relief, which is what everybody screams about, and we could reduce sales taxes and restore some of our essential spending to higher education and social services. And so the point is when people scream about property tax rates, what I always say is, look, you can have whatever property tax rates you want. The question is, what do you want to do? If you want a tax rate that lowers the taxes on 96% of Illinoisans, well, that's great, but then you will do nothing to address high property taxes, right? So it was just a rebalancing of things. But, you know, I took a lot of criticism over it, but it was math-based. The amazing thing to me is, and that's why I did this little thing where I handed out calculators to my Republican colleagues, was that if you know that we're going to accumulate $225 billion in debt in the next 27 years doing what we did, right? Doing what right. we just passed. And if you have three Federal Reserve economists that say the only way out of your problems is to raise taxes, the only question is how? Let's decide what's the best way to go about it. And what my Republican colleagues were doing was they're saying, we absolutely won't consider a graduated tax. And I said, well, why are you taking options off the table? Use math, use finances, and then we can have a discussion about the best way to go forward. But don't say you won't consider something until you've provided a mathematical solution, something none of them has ever done.
We're speaking with Democratic State Representative Rob Martwick from Chicago. I'm Rick Pearson. This is the Sunday Spin. Welcome back to your Sunday Spin. I'm Rick Pearson of the Chicago Tribune here in the Allstate Showcase Studio in historic Tribune Tower on North Michigan Avenue. Joining me here in the studio is Democratic State Representative Rob Martwick. We're talking about the recently concluded spring legislative session, concluded with a budget deal, a $38.5 billion budget deal that the governor is expected to sign tomorrow. And before we took the break, Representative, we were talking about the graduated tax plan that you had laid out there, obviously being used as a source of criticism. But inherent in that was you mentioned being able to offer property tax relief. And, you know, we hear people talk about, oh, you know, I've got a plan to cut your property taxes or whatever. Talk about it. We don't see necessarily any plans. And given that the bulk of the property tax bill is for schools, local schools, then you see like a proposal that the governor had in his original budget in February that would shift pension costs over to local school districts. How does that going to reduce your property taxes? There seems to be some incongruity in a lot of this conversation.
Yeah, there is, and we just passed a provision that reduces what we call pension spiking, which is the last salary increases that you can get in your last years. And this used to be a popular tool to really boost somebody's pension, is given these massive pay increases in the last few years of their contract. So we put in a cap at 6%. Now we just lowered that to 3%, meaning that you can only get a 3% salary increase per year in the last 4 years of your contract, so they keep you from spiking. But here's the problem, right? If a union goes in and negotiates a 4.5% pay raise, well, that now shifts the burden. Anything over 3%, the local government has to pick up. So your school district will have to pick up those increases. They will have to pick up the pension cost of those increases, and that will be a burden on the local school district. So, you know, providing property tax relief has to be more than just a wish. It has to be a plan, and the only plan you can do that with is money. So with the school funding reform, we are putting money in that local school districts can take out, but it's small. It's $50 million a year. The plan that I had proposed put $2.5 billion per year into property tax reduction. So it would have been historic. But again, you know, you can't just wish that. You have to find it from somewhere else. And the way I paid for that was progressive tax rates. And mine were, I just used the ones from Wisconsin, which are probably the most flat and moderate of all the progressive taxes because they start at 4 and end at 7.65, unlike Oregon, which starts at 1 and ends at 11.
We've got a call from Tom. Tom, welcome to the Sunday Spin.
Morning, gentlemen. You were referencing solutions for the economy by indicating three individuals that, well, you know, the only way you can get out of this is to raise taxes. But can we not also cut spending to meet our budget? Or if we continue the same way, we'll be $227 billion in the hole. Maybe if we cut some spending, we wouldn't be that far in the hole.
All right, Tom, thank you so much for calling.
Yeah, thanks, Tom. That's a good question. And I think anytime you've got financial crises, I think that what we need to do is we need to definitely look at ways to cut spending. Last year, the governor in his budget proposal proposed about $2 billion in spending. And in the final budget that we passed over his veto, there was closer to $3 billion in spending. So we cut more than $1 billion more than the governor. We've also made successive cuts to almost every line you can find in the government, and including administration. Our administrative costs are so low. They're lower than on a per capita basis than any other state. And so we've made these cuts, huge cuts to higher education. We now fund higher education 50% less than we did a decade ago. So there's no doubt we should always look towards cuts, but the idea that we can cut our way out of this, the problem is we've done all of the cuts with, you know, and not all of the cuts. You can always find a little bit more, but we've really picked the low-hanging fruit off the tree. It's going to be a challenge. We should keep looking for it, but it's going to be a challenge. One of the things that I'm happy about is, and you talked about it a little bit on the last segment, is I think we've found some creative ways to save some money on pensions. It's not going to solve our pension problem, but I believe it'll start to nibble around the edges and make that repayment of that debt more manageable.
Could you explain this, the pension buyout provision?
Sure.
That was inserted into this?
Yeah, there's two buyout provisions. One is a proposal that, both of these really I've worked on in a very bipartisan fashion with a friend of mine, Mark Batnick, who's a Republican legislator from Plainfield. So his portion of it was the buyout of vested inactives. These are people who have worked long enough in government to vest in a pension, but have long since left and are working in the private sector and are no longer accruing. So they're vested, but what they will receive will be a relatively small pension in terms of what they would get monthly out of it. So what we've offered them is to sell their pension benefit back to us. We'll give them 60 cents on the dollar, so they get the money up front of the value of that, a lump sum buyout. As you mentioned, Missouri did this and got about a 22% pickup on it. It's yet to be seen what we will get on it. I get that there are some concerns. I cautioned the budgeteers and the administration to be conservative, but they said this is the guidance that we have. We're going to use that as our estimate. The second one, which was my proposal, which was to offer to retirees at the time that they retire the ability to sell a portion of their COLA so they could accept a lower COLA in exchange for cash up front. So right now, say for instance, a teacher, the average teacher would walk in and get a 3% compounding COLA every year on their benefit, their retirement annuity. In mind, they would walk in and they would agree to, optionally, they don't have to take it. If they want to keep their COLA, 3% compounding COLA, they can. But they can opt into a lower 1.5% simple COLA. And then we calculate out the difference of the value between those, a 3% compounding and a 1.5% simple. And they would get a check up front. That check is about $120,000. But everyone who does it improves the funded liability of the system, especially, and I love this, because we're doing a bonding complement to pay for this, so we're not using system assets. So everyone who takes this really dramatically starts to improve the funded liability of the pension systems and should save us money. Now, they estimated $380 billion in savings in the first year.
$380 million
in savings in the first year. Whether or not that will come to fruition or not, I don't know. But there are many. See, with this, because anyone who takes one of these because of the fact that we're getting it at a discount, my plan is to come back next year and offer more options. How about a 3% simple? How about selling a portion of your annuity? So if you're getting a $100,000 annuity, how about you sell $30,000 of your annuity? So let's find something that works for these people, because anyone who takes one of these deals, the more participation, the more the savings.
Well, and if, as we know from the courts, we're basically hamstrung.
Yes. This is constitutional because it's permissible and it's optional. It's not a lot of the pie-in-the-sky unconstitutional ideas that have been floated around lately. It's something that everyone agrees will work, is constitutional, doesn't harm anybody, and in fact may be a really a great benefit for some of the people who opt into it.
Yeah, because part of the a lot of talk about this consideration model type thing of alternative benefits,
yeah.
But everybody that I've talked to that understands that model says, well, but one of the options has to be you don't do anything.
Yes, and we actually passed that last year. We actually passed the Cullerton model with the option that you could keep what you've got, because that makes it valid, but it was never implemented.
Right. Well, and I guess, do you, the last couple of seconds here we've got, in this kumbaya moment that we've had, to basically end when everybody got on I-55 and drove home, because now we start the campaign season?
Yeah, you know, it doesn't end, and that's one of the things that I'm happy to be here to talk to you about. There's no doubt it's a great step. We need to show stability, but we can't take our eye off the ball. We've got mounting problems that we need to address, and we need to find answers to them so we don't hamstring the next generation. It's coming fast.
It's coming fast, and these are big debts.
Yeah, they're huge, and we've got to get our head around them. We have to have a mathematical financial plan to pay them off, otherwise they will consume us. Imagine if we have to go to 8.5% flat tax. If you think people are fleeing the state now, try and propose that one.
That's Democratic State Representative Rob Martwick, Democrat from Chicago. Representative, thank you as always for
joining me. Thanks so much. I appreciate being here one last time.